Yeah. Oh, really?
Kid, how you doing? You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, folks, I'd like to bring the meeting to order, please. Good afternoon. We'll get right on it here. We do have a quorum. We have some audience participation, more than the one person you have on your agenda. Mr. Howard Harding, like to speak. If you keep time to 3 minutes, we'd appreciate it. Yes, sir. I'm going to have a podium.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the director for offering me this opportunity to speak to you today. As the memo in the folder, which I hope you can just look at least, in blue, indicates, I'm not here to sell something. I'm here to hopefully encourage more constructive discussion of the topic of state-supported interstate rail passenger. My motivation for being here is public comments recently by various state public officials suggesting that they need to better acquaint themselves with facts. Now, I don't propose that I'm the expert and everybody else is ignorant. I have no such grand ideas. It's just a matter that the public discussion of this issue at the present time is dominated by ideas that have the most tenuous connection to facts, if that. And so I'd like to present a few of those to help stimulate the idea that maybe there's some useful things to talk about before jumping to the conclusion. Before I start, I want to tell a couple stories. Both of which you probably won't recognize a connection to the topic, but I believe that there is a connection. The first one involves an alleged meeting between one of the early European explorers of this continent and Native America. The story goes that the two of them met on the beach along a bay in which the explorer ship was anchored. By some means unknown to anybody, they managed to figure out a quick way to communicate with them and proceeded to discuss why these explorers were there and the lifestyles of both peoples and so on and so forth. And at one point, the European picked up a stick, drew a circle about the size of a beach ball in the sand, then drew another circle about the size of a baseball, immediately adjacent to and slightly overlapping the big circle, and he told the Native American, this large circle represents what we Europeans know about the world, and this small circle represents what you know about the world, based on what you've been telling me. The Native American stood there for a few moments, looked at it, took a stick from the European, drew a very bright big circle around it, about the size of a modern-day traffic roundabout, and said, and this represents what none of us know. The other story has to do with Dr. Werner von Braun, the German rocket scientist who was largely responsible for getting the first European, or first American spacecraft in orbit, following the orbiting of Russian Sputnik. After he was called to help get the program moving, when the civilian folks couldn't get it working, he was subjected to endless hearings in Washington. Following one of those, he was overheard to say, these Americans, they're crazy. They think if you institute a government crash program, it will work as though you get 9 women pregnant and get a baby in 1 month. Obviously not possible. Well, I think you'll get the relevance of those in a few minutes, but anyway, I'd like to turn right now to the three basic issues. First one is, a lot of the critics are saying, nobody will ride a train that averages 50 miles an hour and it goes no faster than 79. Well, if that's the case, how do you explain the record ridership Amtrak's been setting each year for the last dozen years now? Millions. And none of their trains outside the Northeast Corridor exceed 79 miles an hour, and few of them average 50. In addition, there's 15 other states, from North Carolina to California, Washington, and North Carolina, who support train service very similar to what Ohio's proposing to do for Christ. All of these 15 states are eagerly seeking to expand their service because passenger demand exceeds capacity. Another factor that seems to be left out of this is that America's two largest demographic groups, Generation Y, those 21 to 30, and the baby boomers, 65 plus, who are about to retire, have growing interests in alternatives to driving everywhere for everything, and they both increasingly favor vibrant, walkable neighborhoods and freeway-free intercity travel. There's in your packet, there's references for both of those statements to back them up. In fact, the references on that and the blue pages and the attached white pages generally support everything I'm really saying here. And if there's anything that's not covered there that anybody wishes to talk about, I'll be happy to talk with you at our mutual convenience. The next argument is that Ohio cannot afford the estimated annual operating cost of $17 million. Well, that happens to be less than ODOT currently spends to mow the grass on state maintained highways. It's also far less than 1% of ODOT's overall budget. And beyond that, the first 3 years of operation, at least 80% of that figure, whatever it is, $17 million less or more, will be covered by, or can be covered by, CMAQ money, as it was in the state of Maine, leaving Ohio with a much smaller share. Most importantly, though, is that there won't be any cost to the state for operating the service prior to the year 2013, because it'll take that long to finish up the preparatory work, which includes the current analyses that are underway and the completion of construction plans, final negotiations between the state and Amtrak and the Precast Railroad, the railroad, as they're called, drawing up and finalizing equipment specifications and signing lease or purchase agreements, and training and hiring crews. So it's not something that has to be dealt with by in the next month or 2 years even. Finally, the experience in 15 other states strongly indicates that passenger service, such as Ohio is proposing, will generate state and local tax revenue increases that far exceed the annual projected subsidy. An interesting case in the state of Virginia. A little over a year ago, Amtrak started running a train that the state requested. Had an estimated cost of several million dollars a year for the state to pay. It reached its ridership estimate for a year in the first 6 months and revenue. And for the full year, the first year was operated, the net cost of the state of Virginia was zero. That is not uncommon. The third argument is that Ohio should begin with true high-speed service rather than slower conventional speed service. I think back to where Von Braun's comment. Things don't work that way. Most of the 150-mile-an-hour plus trains operating in the world have been built incrementally, not one giant leap at a time. They began by taking existing trackage and signaling and upgrading them, by building dedicated high-speed tracks only where congestion on the existing lines was too great to handle any other way, and then systematically connected those short pieces into long routes. When the TGVs first started running in France, barely half of the route was on dedicated track. All the rest of it was on existing conventional speed trackage, in and out of stations and for part of the way, well, all the way through the suburbs of Paris. All these high-speed services elsewhere in the world supplement. They do not replace conventional speed service. And portions of the high-speed trains across Europe and in China operate to this day on conventional speed traffic. Another argument that Ohio needs to pay special attention to is our 30 years wasted trying to build high-speed rail first, which we failed completely, among other reasons, because we had no base of intrastate service on which to build high-speed rail. Before you have an existing base that needs expanded capacity, you don't have either the financial or political viability, and we certainly don't have that in mind. It's unreasonable to expect people to provide that money.
15 more seconds, please.
Another reason that we need to be careful about this is that based on the cost of California's first 65 miles of true high-speed line that they're going to build in the rural Central Valley, it would cost Ohio $16 billion to build an entire 255-mile high-speed corridor between Cincinnati and Cleveland. That's only 40 times the amount of money we now have in the feds to start up. Again, as Dr. Von Braun's comments remind us, no crash program can really short-circuit the necessary steps between conception and fruition. No state or nation ever built high-speed rail service on a blank slate. And all such service was created to provide added capacity for existing overcrowded service. As I said earlier, only then is the political and economic capital available to make it work. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you, and I hope that what I've said and what's in the packet will stimulate your thoughts towards more constructive consideration of this issue, and that we have a continued constructive discussion of this subject rather than rash decisions being made on a basis hard to decipher. Certainly remote the facts. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Howard asked for another 2 minutes here, so according to the application here. Our next speaker is from the Citizens for a Better Montrose, Victoria Sabino. 3 minutes, please.
Hello. Thank you. I am also a resident at the Enclave. And first I would like to ask everyone in this room that if they or anyone in their family knew that a development of this magnitude, 39 acres that will be open 24/7, is going to be built across the street from where they live in a residential neighborhood on a two-lane road, would you be against it? I'm against this development not only because it will ruin our quality of life and lower our property values, but also because there will be a constant barrage of noise pollution and air pollution from semis, delivery trucks, cars, buses, armored trucks, and trash trucks all night long. And then there is a crime associated with Walmart, especially the stores that are open 24/7. We would also have to listen to the truck's annoying beeping all night long as they are backing up. It will also be upsetting knowing that the property was zoned residential in 1988. I am also worried about the destruction of Montrose. Did anyone really read the article that was in the Beacon on December 2nd? It confirmed my fears. Joe Clippa said Walmart wants a one-stop shopping feature. They want to add a grocery store. How many grocery stores do we need within a one-mile radius? We have Acme, Giant Eagle, Aldi's, Mustard Seeds, and Walmart does sell some groceries now. They also want to add a gas station. Again, how many gas stations do we need on Montrose? He said they wanted to stay in the retail corridor. Rosemont Commons is in the retail corridor, not Rock Rock Road. It's a two-lane high or road. I have to admit, it's a good strategy. I'm not only worried about the businesses that will suffer and the full-time employees that will be losing their jobs and other businesses because Walmart wants a one-stop shopping facility. You also have to consider the restaurants that are going to suffer because of the traffic congestion. How many people are going to wait in traffic and then wait in line to be seated? I told Coffee Township trustees and several other people that Montrose is going to end up a smaller version of Rolling Acres. After all, Walmart's goal is to crush the competition, according to its officials. They should stay where they are and share the profits of Montrose and try not to monopolize them. As far as the traffic study was done by URS, Larry Levy's company, Larry Levy, said they failed to approve Route 77 and Cleveland Masson Road, which is always backed up now. Can you imagine it with added semis, trucks, and cars? I was going to get into that. But anyway, they did not include the main roads, and I can point out that it would be Route 18. And I'm just going to read it. They also mentioned to pay off the cars that are trying to exit Route 77 onto 18 West, with the traffic from Route 18 also trying to enter 77 and 21. The traffic is always backed up there. Have you ever tried to cut in and get to drive Route 77 or 21 South? They also talked about widening the intersection at Springside Drive and Route 18. Again, they would have to widen the street to the number of cars that would be turning onto Springside. They talked about putting a roundabout.
Time's up, please.
Well, I would just like to say I would like to applaud Jason Segetti's comment in the newspaper. I hate to see all this traffic congestion move to the stores a mile away. And also, I would like to thank Bill Roth, the mayor of Fairlawn, and the Fairlawn City Council for doing everything possible to protect the residents of Fairlawn and the people that live, drive, work, and shop in Montrose and the surrounding area. And I only hope the other officials and decision makers follow suit. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Curtis, is that microphone on? Can you make sure, please?
Yes, it was before.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to angle it up a little bit.
All right, our next speaker will be from Summit Management Services, Herb Newman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Herb Newman. You know me. I own the current Walmart Center. Kudos to you, Mr. Segedy, and your staff on this study. It's targeted at the wrong people, and let's make it a little more simple. When I built the Walmart Center and the center across the street where Sears and Hobby Lobby is, the city of Fairlawn said, here's your zoning, but you're going to widen West Market Street from four lanes to seven. Okay, I'll do it for my frontage, Mr. Mayor. No, Mr. Newman, you're going to do it from the terminus of Summit Mall to Cleveland Maslin Road, and you're going to pay for it all. Taxpayers aren't going to pay a dime. Okay, I didn't like it, but I said I'd do it. We'll start the center and then we'll do the road. No, Mr. Newman, you're going to build the road first, then you're going to build the center, and you're going to pay for every damn dime of it. $2.5 million 21 years ago. That's about $12 million today. You did it. Now you see the shoes on the other foot. I'm now the taxpayer. Why should we worry about who's going to bear the responsibility? $7 million with a couple poo-poo turnabouts, widening lanes, and some left turn lanes ain't going to cut it, Mr. Segedy. You're talking about five lanes for all of Rothrock Road, and all of Rothrock Road ought to be improved, because if Walmart goes there, it just ain't Walmart. It's every but all the acolytes that come with them. You're going to have the whole road from Cleveland Maslin Road to West Market Street improved for retail. So you better get with the program. So let's not sit here and hold our rear ends and worry about how the taxpayers can afford this. The taxpayers don't have to pay one dime for it. Just tell the biggest elephant in the room that he's got to pay for it before he starts construction. And some county engineer ought to get off his duff and do a real study on what it would take to accommodate all of this retail. Walmart is moving, so we'll deal with it. Their threat is, if you don't let us go to Rothrock Road, we'll go to Medina. Well, see you later, Charlie. What am I worried about? Why am I standing in front of you? I own a lot of retail, over 1 million square feet at the corner of Market and Cleveland Maslin Road. That's Main and Main. I don't want the infrastructure screwed up that I improved. I don't want Cleveland Maslin Road turning into a hodgepodge so I can't attract tenants to my retail space. I don't want West Market Street backed up when you're turning onto Springside Drive. What do the officials in Summit County do? I still do not know. We have a Summit County executive. What does he do? Grab hold of this wild area called Montrose, that's comprised of Bath, Fairlawn, and Copley. Let's put some rhyme and reason to this, and let's protect our values. I happen to be a very big taxpayer. Let's make the biggest elephant in the room, Walmart and Mr. Levy, pay for it up front. It ain't going to be $7 million, and if it is, I guarantee you, they walk. Because they expect you to do it for them, because they are Walmart. Get with the program. Put the money up front, big mouth, or walk. And that's what will happen. I guarantee you, we did it. You put up your $2.5 million or you get no shopping centers. I didn't like it, but I did. That's part of business. And when I got all done that next morning, Kostoff, that reprobate mayor, calls me and says, you forgot to put the pear trees on the devil's street for my last $20,000. Okay, mayor. And he still bugs me about it. Tell him to put up the money first, then proceed with their development, and make sure when you engineer the road, engineer it for closing Rothrock at Cleveland Maslin Road, as Mayor Roth has proposed. Thanks for your time. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for your comments. We're going to move into number two on your agenda and minutes. I hope you read your minutes from September 29th, 2010. We have a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Mayor Gonsi and somebody over here. Eric Zetley. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Then number three, staff reports. We'll start off with 3A, financial progress report. Yeah, motion required on this.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Financial progress report was attachment 3A in your packet, runs through October 31st of this year. 4 months into our fiscal year, we've expended 30% of the budget, so I'm pleased to report that we are in the black, within budget, and request approval of the financial progress report.
So moved.
Second. First and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We have a technical progress report. Who's doing our report?
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this brief since we've got a fairly full agenda today. One thing I wanted to point out, since we launched our new website back in August, we are improving the functionality with our traffic count data. So if you are interested in traffic counts, we've got an improved interface for finding those under the mapping. And if you have any trouble locating those or have questions, please feel free to call either Heather Davis or Dave Pillay of our staff, and they can help you with that. Probably the most two significant developments since we last met. The first one is, you might remember we signed on to a memorandum of understanding for the region collectively being Akron, Cleveland, Canton, and Youngstown to apply for a federal grant through the Department of Housing and Urban Development to do sustainable communities regional plan. We were one of the only regions in the country that was awarded a grant. It was a very competitive process. We got $4.25 million for that. And that's collectively all of Northeast Ohio. So right now the signatories of that MOU, which included AMATS, the other three MPOs, many of the county governments and so forth, are working out, you know, starting basically a 501(c) to administer that grant. But it was really good news for the region. I don't think it'll be a panacea, but it is, I think, a great first step at developing more of a regional dialogue on planning issues. So we're real excited about that. Probably the other most significant thing, as we all know, is there was an election between the last meeting and this one. Have a lot of ramifications on transportation, both at the federal and the state level. At the federal level, the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Jim Oberstar from Minnesota, who had been pretty instrumental in drafting a new transportation bill, lost his seat. And now Representative Micah from Florida will be taking his place. It's really unclear on what direction the new transportation bill will go in. We had a very spirited discussion at the last policy committee meeting of about the gas tax, and that continues to be the sticking point in Congress. There probably won't be a transportation bill until they address how they're going to pay for it. No observer I've read expects there to be a transportation bill in 2011, so we're probably looking at over a year of continuing funding resolutions if Congress doesn't shut down, and we hope that it doesn't. At the state level, the governor's office changed hands. Jerry Ray was announced. Some of you may remember Jerry from previously heading ODOT in the 90s, was announced as the new director of the Ohio Department of Transportation. One of the main issues the new administration's dealing with right now is the $8 billion deficit. I know a lot of you are a lot more familiar with that than I am because it could have ramifications on the local government fund that all of your communities receive. It's unclear right now what the transportation ramifications are. The one high-profile thing was that Governor Kasich had vowed to stop work on the 3C rail corridor. That's moving forward as far as that work being halted. Otherwise, ODOT's, you know, some of the initial communications I've heard from the upcoming Director Ray and Governor-elect Kasich are they're going to continue to pursue a fix-it-first policy, and, you know, there may be lots of other policy changes right now that we're not aware of, but we'll try to keep you apprised of all that as things move forward. And with that, that was all I had to share with all of you, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to address those.
Anybody have any questions at all? None? Okay, we'll go to status of the AMATS sub-allocated federal funds. Your attachment 3C.
Thank you. As you may know, our funding policy allows for a one-time 15% funding increase on AMATS funded projects. We do this on an annual basis, and we just did it for the fiscal year 2011 funding. And in the folders at the door is our normal funding program balances table. And those increases have been added to those projects in 2011. And if you look down at the bottom, you can see our balances for each of the fiscal years. So we have about a $6 million balance in 11. We go negative for a couple of years, and then we start building up a significant balance by the end of 2015. This Friday, the next Friday, we have another project review meeting. These are quarterly meetings where we meet with the sponsors of all these projects on this table, see how those projects are going along, and see if any of them need to be moved to a different fiscal year or not. And last thing I want to mention is that we've begun developing the new TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, for fiscal years 2012 through 2015. In January, you'll be seeing a list of projects for your review and approval of projects that are going to be receiving federal funds over those next 4 years. It'll be a part of the TIP. And then we'll have public meetings after that. There'll be a second draft. And then in May, the complete TIP document will be presented to this committee for final approval. So that's all I have on this item. If anybody has any questions, we have to answer.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Okay, we'll go to old business. Do a follow-up on the Rothrock Road, Montrose Planning Study, which is attachment 4A. Jason, will you talk about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is September 23rd, Policy Committee meeting. The staff presented the Rothrock Road, Montrose Planning Study. This analyzed the potential impacts resulting from a Walmart and Sam's Club relocating from the city of Farallon, 1 mile away to a location on Rothrock Road in Copley Township. After that presentation, Mayor Roth of the city of Farallon had requested that we revisit the issue at today's meeting, and so we wanted to do a follow-up to that. We have a map here that shows the area where the existing Walmart and Sam's Club would move. And where they basically from the Farallon area, which is in purple, to the green area, which is Copley, roughly a mile away. During the AMATS, or in the AMATS, Rothrock Road Montrose Planning Study, it recommended about $7 million worth of traffic improvements that the staff felt would be needed to alleviate some of the traffic impacts that could be brought on by this development. The developer had hired a consultant to do a traffic study to submit to the county, which in turn is reviewed by the county engineer. That study was done by URS, and that's being under review, or at the time, and I believe it still is being reviewed. However, there have been a few things that have taken place since the last time we met. One is that many of you might have seen the paper, the city of Farallon is considering cul-de-sacking both Rothrock Road and Rosemont Boulevard. Also, because of this, the Summit County Engineer will be asking the developer's consultant, URS, to revisit the study to look at this possibility and what kind of impacts it could have, because cul-de-sacking those two roads, I think most people believe, will have a significant impact on the area. Also in the paper the other day was that Walmart did officially announce its intentions to move. And then obviously what we've seen is we've seen a lot of organized development discussing this issue and concerned about this possible relocation. Because we put this on the agenda, we had public involvement on it at our Citizens Involvement Committee last Thursday. I wanted to summarize that a little bit. Participants included the City of Fairlawn residents, members of Citizens for a Better Montrose, City of Fairlawn staff, and then citizens from the greater Akron area, which is kind of the usual representation of our CIC committee. The majority of the public comment that AMATS received on this issue was the fact that it was very possible, and they were accepting the fact that Walmart could move, but if so, citizens felt that it must be required to pay for all the needed traffic improvements, which I think we heard those sentiments echoed from the public comment just now. The biggest concern from citizens, and I think also potentially from the staff, is looking at what the scope needs to be for those improvements. Citizens expressed that they're concerned about all potential studies. Would they kind of stretch far enough to understand the full impact of the possible move to Walmart of Walmart from Fairlawn to Montrose? And both that was a criticism of both the URS study and the AMATS study, as we also heard, that I think that there were citizens that believed that these traffic impacts will be much greater than what either one of those studies projected. We did receive one citizen supporting the new development, and I felt that was important to note, just to express there was a minority opinion at that public meeting. At this point, from the staff's perspective and the Summit County engineer with what they're working on right now, we do feel that it'd be wise to wait to take any action until the Summit County engineer has had the opportunity to review a final URS study, which includes the cul-de-sacking of both Rosemont Boulevard and Rothrock Road, and for the policy committee to move at all at this point or to make any kind of motion would be premature. However, we do think that it's important that this is an important regional issue and that it needs to be discussed by its region's leaders. I think some of the questions the staff was asking in our internal meetings was, is there a regional approach that can be taken to avoid these types of situations in the future and possibly even to alleviate some of the problems with this particular incident, but also is there a way that AMATS could be involved sooner in the process to help avoid these types of transportation and land use conflicts? The policy committee approved the Connecting Communities Initiative in September, and a lot of what was in the initiative was the importance of integrating our transportation planning with our land use planning. I think what we've seen, especially at the Rothrock situation, is how unfortunately that hadn't happened is now creating this type of conflict. And then I think the other issue that we were hoping to get discussion from the policy committee about was, in this situation and others, is it important for the policy committee to echo the sentiments of concerned citizens? I think what the staff feels is, should the policy committee consider a resolution denying federal funds to a project that we know is directly related to a development as large as this versus, and making a statement that the taxpayers should not be on the hook for this type of development. I think from that perspective, from the staff, we were looking for potential discussion or opinion from the policy committee to give us some direction. And I think as this gets moved forward, talking to the county engineer, the study and everything we'll probably be looking at sometime in the new year, what type of, if any, action would the policy committee feel comfortable taking, and what should be a part of that discussion. But I'd be happy to answer any questions about any of the details as far as I know, and otherwise I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Floor is open. Anybody like to say anything? Members, this? Yes.
Has any proposal made with respect to the utilities to these buildings? Because they're fairly substantial. I mean, nothing that I know that I've seen has anything to do with the water, sewer, fire, police, and all that kind of stuff that would be needed.
Yeah, and we haven't done it. As Transportation Agency, we haven't done any of that analysis. I'm not sure, Joe, if there's anything you can add to that.
First of all, my name is Joe Paradise from the Summit County Engineer's Office. If I was not at this meeting, I would be writing the comments for the URS report study right now. We have received our version, our set of copies from our consultant. We are combining it with the comments we received from the City of Fairlawn, their consultant, MS Consultants. We've got some of the concerned citizens' input included in. We have comments from ODOT. We are seeking written comments from AMATS. Curtis indicated that I should be getting those in the next day or two. We're going to put it into one document, which we will do. We will send to our client, who is the Steve's. We are their engineers. We are responding to their request for review. Once we have made the presentation, made the submittal to Copley Township, we will also put the entire document on Summit County Engineer's website for access to anybody who's interested. Make it available. There was a question raised about fire and police and sewer and water. I do not know about water. I can tell you that the fire and police are Copley Township. They've indicated they can service the area. The sewer, on November 23rd, the Summit County Engineer hosted a public meeting at Copley High School. There was a representative from the Department of Environmental Services, another deputy director in the audience in attendance. They are aware of the need for it. They've indicated to me, they haven't written to me, but they've indicated to me they have capacity, or will have capacity to service the area. In conversations and in the public meeting, Mr. Levy has indicated that all improvements to the traffic, for the traffic infrastructure, will be paid for by private funds. They will not come from government funds. We do not have that in writing yet. That was going to be one of our comments, is addressing that issue of how do we secure those funds. Whether he puts it in escrow with the county executive, or we have permits from the bill first, once we decide what he's going to build. We have to establish some mechanism for that to occur. The county engineer does not intend to use any taxpayer funds to make any improvements out there, out the Montrose area for this development. With that said, I am reviewing it. I am receiving taxpayer funds for my salary. We are consuming some of our own funds in doing so. So we are spending some funds for it, no construction dollars. Between the September submittal and today, there have been suggested revisions, such as the cul-de-sacking of Rothrock Road, cul-de-sacking of Rosemont Boulevard. The consultant is going to have to be charged. You're as the consultant to be charged with going back and reanalyzing traffic to see what happens when we do cul-de-sac. Similarly, Mr. Levy made the suggestion at the public meeting on the 23rd that he wants to align Rothrock Road with I-77 off-ramp at Cleveland-Masson Road. Get rid of the dog leg at the intersection. That is going to require additional studies that was not included in the initial report. Whatever those studies indicate is going to be what they indicate. That will take an interchange modification study, which is going to be reviewed by the federal government as part of the interchange modification study. The developer will look at the interchange in question and at least one interchange north and one interchange south of the proposed improvement. So they would be looking at the 2177 interchange, the 1877 interchange, Cleveland-Masson Road interchange, and the next one south, which I believe is Miller Ridgeway?
Yes.
So all that would be included in a interchange modification study for analysis. There is going to be a lot more studies being prepared and presented to accomplish what is being requested. As of this time, we've approved nothing. We have numerous comments, numerous questions that have to be addressed before we can even get to the point where we even think about saying yes. There are some things that have been pointed out by all three review agencies, the alignments of some roads, changing the direction of the flow on Springside Drive, up at 18. All raised red flags, concerns, issues in the flow of traffic that have to be addressed, reanalyzed, and resubmitted for review and comment. That's the current status as I know it. And I will be working on it again this afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Curtis, can you, or Curtis, can you tell me where the cul-de-sacs are that were proposed by
Mayor Ross? My belief is that the Rothrock Road cul-de-sac would take place somewhere around here, is that accurate? And then the Rosemont would take place here, which effectively would mean the only way into this development would be from the brook wall, kind of from the north going south. So it would kind of cut off everything down here. Which, from a general, I think, kind of transportation planner perspective, is that it could have, if the Walmart did go in and the cul-de-sac happened, it could have extreme negative impacts on the traffic flow.
Anybody else have any comments on this? Yes, sir.
Jason, do you have kind of a listserv, a way to talk to other directors of MPOs and see if how they address these kinds of issues? Any input?
We talk, I meet with the other MPO directors on a regular basis. Quite honestly, we don't usually have these kinds of conversations. I think people don't like to discuss issues like this because they think it's controversial, which is quite honestly one reason I think we should discuss it, because it's usually things that are controversial or things that are important. And I think it illustrates a lot of different planning issues we've discussed over the last couple of years of economic development, employers moving from community to community, probably first and foremost what Curtis mentioned, the lack of coordination between zoning and land use and transportation. And I think this issue is just instructive because, in a way, this just evolved. It's not nobody planned to have it happen this way, but that's kind of the whole point, is there are the whole history of Montrose has been kind of retroactively going in and trying to fix things. So I think to answer your question, we don't discuss that very often. I wish we did more.
Well, I would think from the developer standpoint, they'd like it to be a little more uniform also. If every MPO handles these kinds of things differently, that's got to be difficult on both sides.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, I think one reason we wanted to discuss it with all of you is it is unclear on what an MPO's role should be. From the staff's perspective, I think we feel this is too significant of a development not to have some sort of a regional conversation about. But as far as what AMATS is actually able to do, we don't control the zoning. We don't have any authority over how land is developed. But what we do have some authority over is how federal funds are spent and whether or not taxpayer dollars go into a given road project. And I think what our staff is looking at is down the road, we think it would be a mistake to spend tax dollars on improvements that the private sector is necessitating by their actions.
Could you go back to
hold on, Mayor Kern, please.
Sure.
First.
Thank you, Chairman Bullis. Just a couple of thoughts here. Number one, outside of the unnecessary disparaging remarks concerning elected officials in general in Summit County, and in particular our very effective and professional county engineer and our very professional and effective Summit County executive and his staff, I do believe that when we narrow it down to what the meat of the comment really was by our last presenter from the community, is that a requirement of the developer to bear the cost of the standards of the roadways that whatever are, if this project were to be approved, I think it has tremendous merit. I think this also smacks of the need for the local area that is called Montrose, for those communities that make up Montrose, to work together collaboratively to develop a comprehensive plan for the future. It may already be done. I don't know. I've never heard of it before. but I think it really smacks of that and could be a trigger mechanism for that to happen, so that this and other issues won't become so inflammatory and developers in the future know what the criteria is for development over there. I also know that across this great nation of ours, there are literally hundreds of vacated Sam's Clubs and Walmarts left abandoned and boarded up. And it is crucial for communities that these things are going to be placed in, whether it be here in Copley or remain here in Fairlawn or otherwise, that as agreements are made, that the tear down of those minimally constructed buildings take place after a period of time. Many communities have done this, and it's been very effective. There are several, I know of at least another Walmart in a neighboring county that is left abandoned right now to the tune of 300,000 square feet. I believe it's 300,000, maybe it's 100,000. They get into thousands, it's tough to tell. And yet they just moved down the way, but now it's a complete eyesore. And it's very difficult to move, and of course it's negative for the community. So just some thoughts to throw out to everybody. And I do believe that a regional approach is a good one.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Clapper.
Yes, if you can go back to your last slide you showed with the recommendation for
the regional this one?
Yes, yeah, that's it. The last bullet point, and I just want to minor thing here. Should the policy committee echo the sentiments of concerned citizens? I think that the policy committee is an app. Should we just stress that we're advocacy for regional planning? The word echo there implies that we're just reacting only because a few concerned citizens came in here and said something. And I think our reaction here, or our position here, is much more than that. So I guess I've taken exception to the word echo there. I think we need to reflect exactly what you said, that we are planning and do advocate for regional planning, transportation planning, and that type of stuff. So that's my comment.
Okay, yeah, Mayor Cook.
Thanks, Bo. along what Bill's saying and along what Joe's saying in regards to cost, in Macedonia, we had an improvement to our Walmart. All costs related to that were passed through. We received a huge check from them for all the engineering, the studies, and everything else that was done. I'd like to see this be a factor in the future. And as far as making any comments in regards to such a situation like this, I would like to see it go to committee. I would like to have a group of my peers sit down and say, is there anything that we can say on this? Or as this man says, well, you know, we've got our own goal. But to just sit around this table and know what I know about this particular project, I would not comment on it. Okay? Thank you.
Anybody else? Yes.
On behalf of Mayor Roth, I would just mention that we do have legislation in front of our council regarding the closure of those two intersections.
That's John Sellers, with engineer for Fairlawn. So you have legislation on to close
Rosemont Boulevard and our portion of Rothrock.
Okay. Yes. Anybody else like to speak? I don't know, sir. I usually members. It's only for members. I'm sorry. Anybody else? Mayor Lyon?
I just have a question about the study that's being done. Does that just examine the impact of these two stores on the transportation in that area? Is that the limit of that study?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, some reservations.
Some reservations. So it doesn't really, the study as you reported it from URS, this looks at a narrow question of the impact of this development on the existing infrastructure there.
The only caveat we put into it was that all traffic that was Walmart at the existing location will assume to still be in existence. as if Mr. Newman would have put a target store there. He'd still have that same traffic. So the traffic coming in would be additional traffic over and above what currently exists.
And does it request an analysis of future improvements that might be needed, or is it simply a raw material for you to then analyze what the situation is?
It's not just a raw material, it's a refinement of the, it's an analysis of the data that's being generated at that particular location.
I'm just trying to understand a little bit what is going on in terms of analysis, and that's fragmented in itself, of course. The engineer's office represents the township. Part of our problem here is we don't really have a cohesive way to even get our hands around this issue. And I guess to answer the question of the staff, there ought to be a cohesive, more regional approach that includes the communities. The question is, how do you get that? Because the engineer's office is really has an obligation, in their view, to represent the township. We have a different representation, if you will, from an engineering standpoint for the city, and they're pursuing different points of view on that. I think what we see is a very dysfunctional situation in terms of getting true planning that anticipates not just these stores being put there, but as was said by the one of the people participating today, it does not anticipate future development. It doesn't look at the prospect of how this is going to develop into the future. We don't have that kind of cohesive planning for this area, so it is tremendously dysfunctional from a planning standpoint. I mean, I don't think I'm pointing out anything, but to sink a little more deeply into what we're dealing with here, we're only kind of scratching the surface, even with this discussion, as to what relative to what really needs to take place. So, you know, how do we get to those issues? We can't force those communities to develop a comprehensive plan for this. So it raises the question, where do we go from here? I think those are some of the troubling things about this that have to do with how we organize ourselves, how we encourage identification of areas like this into the future, to encourage communities to plan together in these identified areas. Because, again, we're just reacting
yes.
to events that are coming along.
Right.
So we have this to deal with, but into the future, how do we do a better job of getting ahead of these things? I think that's something we should take up as some discussion into the future, a more strategic, longer-term issue. I'm not sure what we do about this on a shorter-term, tactical, approach, but it sounds to me like even the studies being done don't address the full scope of the issues that we'll be facing in this area. I don't know if that does any good, but those are just my observations.
That's fine. That's appreciate that. Did Copley have a comprehensive land use plan at all?
Yes, I believe Copley does have a comprehensive land
use plan. Did it include this in their plan? Any retail at all on that side of the road?
Yeah, it is zoned for C3 commercial, okay. Which allows those big box stores.
Okay.
Right, and one of the issues from a coordination standpoint is Copley's is zoned for Walmarts and other big box retail. Fairlawn's right across the street is zoned for a mix of single and multi-family residential, and that's one of the big, most likely in this. This is just, again, how that evolved, but most likely the staff feels if this were all in one political unit, it would have never been zoned like that. I mean, most of you in your communities don't put right. residential right next to high-intensity commercial uses. Okay, I want to move on. Is anybody else, anything else they want to say about this? Because I don't think AMAS can do much about this as a planning organization except to try to thwart future things like this. And just like Mike Lyons said, we're going to have to get these communities to get together a little bit better. Move along here.
Report of nominating committee, report of the nominating committee. I understand Eugene Roberts, Mayor Kern, and Mayor Lyons were on this.
Yes.
Do you have any report, please?
Defer to Mayor Lyons.
Yes, I think that Jim Roberts was on it too, was it? And Kim. And we emailed back and forth. I hope I get the names of our nominees. And one of them is not is a name I'm not sure how to pronounce. Bob Bath. Is that?
Call me anything but late for dinner.
All right. Well, we recommend Bob for the chairman's position and Joe Bica, the mayor of Ravenna, for the vice chair position. Is that what it is? Okay. See, I'm right on top of it.
We don't have any.
But so that would be our suggestion and our nomination.
Okay.
For those positions.
I hate to mess things up, but does anybody want to nominate anybody from the floor? Okay, we have a recommendation by the nominating committee to elect Bob Path and Joe Bica, mayor of Ravenna. Could I have a motion to that effect?
So
moved. Pick one out, Kerry. Could I have a second?
Second.
All right. Motion on the floor in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I'll finish this meeting out. I want to thank you for putting your trust in me. I just want to say I wanted to get everybody involved a little bit more, as you could tell this year. Instead of just being a cookie cutter, there's too much money out there on the table for you to sit back and not stand up for your rights. And that's the way I feel about this. So we'll move along here. Now, you got your new calendars.
Yeah.
They're in here. So put them in your planners. If anybody has a problem with that, let Jason know. Oh, you want a motion on the calendar? Okay. They would like a motion on the calendar. So would anybody like to make a yeah, Mr. Kuiper, any motion?
Thanks.
Second? Anybody?
Second.
Mayor Plank. Y'all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Congratulations. You're taking over on January 1st, all right? Okay. This is another discussion I wanted to bring up. You have a... on your 5B, we discussed the 20% local share requirement we've discussed. So I'd like to bring this up for, do you want to do a report on this? Is that what it is?
Yes, Victor, actually.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me switch these sheets over here. I got too many. Oh, Victor, go ahead. I'm sorry.
At the last meeting in September, the issue was brought up regarding our 20% local share requirement. Just to provide a little bit of background, the feds have their rule is that their funds are to be matched with 20% of the local share for their 80% federal funding. What AMF's policy does, it kind of takes that one step further. It says that 20% local share has to be purely from local sources. It cannot be from state funds. And as was brought up in the discussion last month, some communities may not be able to afford this 20% local share, and some that do perhaps struggle to make that share, that 20% share. So the idea was brought forth to allow more flexibility into our funding program by allowing other non-federal funds, basically state funds, to be used as part of the local share, and this would usually be in the form of Ohio Public Works Commission funds, and then also state safety or state resurfacing funds. This is nothing new. There's many NPOs in Ohio that already do this. And then also just to kind of just talk about some of the concerns. One would be that this was also discussed at the TAC meeting last week, and it's sometimes it's pretty difficult to line up multiple sources of funding. And if that happens, sometimes when that happens, you can't get them all in the same year, and that local sponsor can't cover their costs. They may possibly cancel the project. And ultimately, what that does, it leaves us with funding on the table, and then that will ultimately look like that we don't need the funding that we do receive for LoDOT. So that's the biggest concern. But to help avoid that, what we could do, and even as we do now, is require that the sponsors pass legislation saying that they will provide that 20% match, even if they can or cannot secure any other type of funding to help them with their local share. This would help keep the integrity of our overall funding program. And if this committee should decide to go in that direction, what we'll do is we'll prepare a resolution for next month in January, and to change the funding policy to do this effect, and then if that goes through and any project that sells after January, it'll apply to any project after that point. So with that, I'll let you discuss it. If you have any questions, I'll have to try to answer.
Yes.
And just one clarification, just taking what Victor said a step further, I think as we wrote in the memo, on balance, the staff feels like this would be a good change. I think, you know, we kind of felt like, especially in these economic conditions, it's harder and harder. You have to tap into your general fund more and more to just do these projects. And, you know, why would we make our rules stricter than what the feds require? So that's our recommendation would be for you to make the change, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Jason, Mayor Prokop had sent along an email. I failed to bring it with me.
The chairman has it.
Pardon?
Chairman has it.
Okay.
It's right here.
For those who perhaps didn't receive it, if the chairman might do us a favor in reading that email concerning this issue.
She said, as Mayor Prokrep said, since we will not be attending the meeting, I would like to propose the following language regarding policy change for the local match requirements. It might be as simple as adding language to the existing policy that states, if the grantee is able to obtain alternate funding for the 20% required local match, the alternate funding may be used to supplant local funds. That was just an idea.
And that's really exactly what we're proposing.
Okay, I just want to make sure it was in concert with what you're proposing and what
right.
the staff is, feels comfortable with.
Mayor Kutka?
Well, just that's right on the money to me. And I think that answers all the questions that we might have. And, you know, do we need a motion to just go ahead and use that wording in our existing policy? Because that seems to be the simplest.
I think, if I clarify, what we were proposing is very similar to that. I think what we'd like to do, though, since we have a formal funding policy, is that we would insert basically that language. We'd probably put some other language in there about still requiring communities to come up with the local match if they're not able to get these other sources of funding. We also will probably put some language in the policy about projects where a sponsor anticipates they're going to use state funds or some other source. As Victor works with communities to review projects and kind of shepherd them through the process, we'll probably almost flag those and give them a little bit more attention just to make sure that all the planets align, but basically we would put wording changes in more smooth terms to convey what I just said, and then next meeting we would actually have the passages of the funding policy that changed for your review, and then an accompanying resolution for you to be able to formally adopt the funding changes.
So I guess what I'm looking for here is a motion to have this motion prepared for the next meeting.
Yep. So moved.
Second.
Who made the second? I'm sorry. Current. Any discussion? Yes, sir.
I guess a couple of things. Number one, there's going to be two situations. One is where you have a project already programmed to receive money, and one where you're accepting applications for new projects. And invariably, the application process will require the local community to commit to the 20%. because they won't know that far ahead of time, because the AMATS money runs so much different than any other source. So it could be 4 years away for the local share. So I think the legislation is going to have to require that the local community, at the time an application is selected, that they commit to the money. That's the only way it'll work and keep your system solvent. I guess the second question I have is it going to be for all phases of projects currently programmed? So will it be for right-of-way also, or is it just construction?
Yeah, you raise a good point. We hadn't really specified. I think it would make sense personally to allow it for both.
I mean, I don't know how easy it is to get money for right-of-way. That's what I... It's French. What do you think? I think
that'd be
impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we have to pick up our own right-of-way right now, so...
But I think construction...
Did you have to do that?
I got an earmark.
I'm sorry?
I got a federal earmark.
I wouldn't say that you couldn't get it.
But by
conventional standards, getting money for right-of-way is very difficult. And usually with the Issue 2 money, you got to have that done before you get there. But to preclude it, I don't know that that would be appropriate. I think you just let the chips fall. And if there is an opportunity like an earmark or something special, unique like that, well,
yeah, if it works, fine.
You get it.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Wayne. You got to check in some of those other MPOs, right? Some of their language.
Yeah, and we did do some research with the other MPOs, and at the TAC meeting, Jack Noble from ODOT also shared some of the other experiences of MPOs in our district. For example, Eastgate, the MPO in Youngstown, allows non-local funds to be used for the federal match, and you know that's worked pretty well for them.
All right, we have a motion on the floor.
Question.
Oh, yes, Joe, go ahead.
We mentioned right away, we mentioned construction. We talked about design.
Currently, the funding policy doesn't allow funding for design. That could be another issue. You guys could open a few.
We open up for right away, we open up for design.
I think it's
permitted anyway, is it?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Right now, AMATS will only fund right away or construction, but if I understand what Joe's saying...
Other
MPOs, right, allow their funds to be used for preliminary engineering and design. I think the staff's recommendation for now is to deal with the right-of-way and construction, but it's always something that you guys can direct us to investigate, too.
Well, right now we've been talking about using state non-federal funds for the 20% match. Yes?
Yeah, I was just going to answer Joe's question. The other two that we're familiar with, Eastgate and SCATS, Eastgate will pay for that.
Yes.
But SCATS won't. Yeah, it functions like that.
All right, where are we at? We have a motion on the floor in a second to go ahead and present this in motion form at the next meeting. Anybody else want to say anything? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion passes for that. You will have something prepared the next meeting. Where am I at? Okay, I'm at 6A, resolution 2010-22. Heather.
Hello. In November, all of you approved of the creation of the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Task Force to review and recommend planning studies for funding. The task force initially met at the end of August to discuss the applications themselves and the scoring process. Applications became available on September 1st. They were due October 15th. The staff was excited to receive 17 applications that were all very well written and well thought out. The task force then met again on November 4th to review the applications and to recommend award recipients. The task force is recommending to you today the two top scoring applications for funding submitted by the Village of Richfield and jointly by Metro RTA and the City of Akron. Attachment A, all of you have, if you will take a look there, there are descriptions and scores for all of the applications that we received, as well as more detailed summaries of the repeal and the Metro Akron proposals. I'd like to give you more information on the recommended proposals. First is the Richfield. Richfield has experienced significant economic growth in the last 20 years and is in need of better connections between fragmented subdivisions and commercial development. If you take a look at the map here, you can see that the area itself is separate from Richfield, or separated from the rest of Richfield by 271 and 77, but the study area itself is also divided because of Brexville Road and Wheatley Road. Transportation in Richfield is primarily auto-dependent with little opportunity for bike or pedestrian traffic. It's difficult for users to travel to the separate distinct areas, and it does not provide many options for alternative modes of transportation. The proposal suggests a comprehensive land use and thoroughfare plan for the study area, including street beautification elements to encourage economic development, also bike and pedestrian improvements with better access to public transportation in order to better connect the residential and commercial assets in the area. Okay, the Metro and Akron proposal. This map, if you take a look here, you can see there are six distinct districts that comprise downtown. As many of you know, the north side area is very separated from downtown Akron. That's just one example, but also the university area, etc. The existing transportation system, also downtown, is primarily vehicular due to barriers to residential districts, as well as cost-effective parking that is too far from the users and destination. Also, in some instances, metro system is not really a timely alternative. The proposal suggests increased connectivity between the six downtown districts. The planning study should provide recommendations to improve safety, access, and mobility, as well as alternative modes of transportation. The staff recommends approval of Resolution 2010-22, awarding the Connecting Communities Planning Grant funding to the Village of Richfield and jointly to Metro RTA City of Akron. I would be happy to take any questions.
Any comments?
Was the scoring instrument included with the application? It's not attached here. So people knew how they were going to be scored before.
Yes, the application included values for each question.
And that was returned to all the communities, applicants, right?
Yes, after all the scoring was done, the communities received how they scored.
You had a chance to talk about that with staff or someone. I always get really sensitive when our community gets no funding. So we're a multi-county program, and all of the funding is going to Summit County. That happens. This happened in the past. I'm extremely sensitive to it, so I just want to know how to get our folks in line with some money.
Everyone was welcome to ask questions once they received the email, which I believe they received it from me. They were welcome to call me, email, or anything with questions. So, absolutely. And we're still certainly open to answering questions about that.
Yes, Tom.
No, I was just signing Dave over there.
Hey, I was sitting in those meetings. It was tough. I mean, in fact, for next year, if these funds come up again next year, they're going to expand the scoring system a little bit more because it was so close. But, I want to thank everybody, including myself, for applying because I didn't win either. And it just happened to be that way. But it's the first year, first time they did this. And I think it's going to be, I think we're on a roll here.
I just wanted to say I thought it was a fine scoring.
Yeah.
Is there a regional strategy for this, for connecting communities to the grant? I mean, we talk about regional planning strategy. Has AMAX developed a regional strategy
how they think these funds should be used?
No, not yet. But we are talking about doing a different scoring for next year. The task force, we've discussed getting together again to kind of revisit and revisit for the next round of funds, so that can certainly be brought up.
Yeah, because I might suggest that that is an important part of how the funding should be allocated. Regardless of who's gotten it this time, that we have some sort of an overarching regional plan.
Yeah, and if I can add too to that, there was a lot of discussion in the task force committee about how to grade regional importance, because obviously, like the Akron project, you know, being a larger area, there was concerns, you know, how do you grade that versus, say, a Hiram project, which is obviously, because of the population, affects different way, you know, different amounts of people, but they're still important projects. So I think as we move forward, we're really going to try to take all the comments we get. This is a pilot program, so we're going to try to see next year how do we incorporate all these things and make it a little bit more successful. And what we're really hoping to do is be able to grow it to be able to award possibly up to 4 grants next year, which I think would be a big benefit. So.
Anybody else like to make comment?
Move to adopt the resolution 22.
Second.
Who did that second? Bill Johnson. Any motion on the floor and a second? Any more discussion on it? All in favor say yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Any opposed? Say no. Motion passes. Thank you, Heather. You might want to wait here for a while before everybody leaves and let everybody leave. Okay. Resolution 2010-23, Curtis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 2010-23, Attachment 6B, is approving an amendment to the Transportation Improvement Program to add projects for both Metro and TARDA. These projects are coming through the Next Generation State of Good Repairs Program, which is part of USDOT's STP funds that are administered through ODOT. Metro will be receiving a number of buses and preventative maintenance, as well as PARTA will receive a number of buses and preventative maintenance. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2010-23.
Move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Opposed say no. Motion passes. Okay. We're at 6C, 2010-24, Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On August 2nd, 2010, AMTS posted an announcement for the accepting applications to receive funding under the Federal Transit Administration's CHARP and New Freedom programs. Projects that are awarded these funds must be consistent with the AMATS Area Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Plan, which was approved in May of 2008. The function of the plan is to improve transportation services for persons with disabilities, older Americans, individuals with lower incomes. The staff is recommending that the policy committee approve $401,359 to the New Freedom Program to TARDA in support of the Mobility Management Program. And from the DART program, the staff recommends that $280,206 be awarded to PARTA for the mobility management program, as well as $364,000 for Metro RTA to provide reverse commuter express bus service from Akron to Stowe. The staff recommends approval of this resolution.
Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Certainly second. Okay, any discussion? All in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no, please. All right, one more here. We're at 6D. That'll be Victor, Resolution 2010-25.
Thank you. There's two new processes we need to add to the TIP. The one is the Hiram Bike Trail Study. They met some discretionary funds to do the study in fiscal year 2011. And then also Kent Road. This is a new traffic signal. Kent Road and Springfield Lake Drive in the village of Lakemore and Springfield Township. This project is also scheduled for fiscal year 2011 and that would be
May. Are we taking Hiram out of this now?
He's going to go get the check.
Never leave the room.
All I have to do is vote no.
What? The vote no?
Okay, any questions? I have a motion?
Second.
A second by Ralph Galletta. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Say no. One more thing. You guys can leave. They want to give me a plaque.
On behalf of the staff and the policy committee, and Jason apologizes he had to cut out early, but we'd like to give this plaque to Mayor Al Bullis for being a fine AMATS policy committee chairman. From the staff's perspective, he's done a really great job, and I know we really appreciated working with him, and I think he's been a great chairman. So a round of applause.
Thank you. That was cool. Okay. Last time, can I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So
moved. Does anybody have anything else? The motion to say? Yeah. It's too late. Leave your chair.